Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Hey team, welcome back to another episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. Today I'm really excited to be sitting down with Sam Woodcock, who is a paramedic or a heart paramedic and also does something really cool, which we haven't really had anyone on doing yet, which is expedition paramedicine. So going across the world and being the paramedic on all sorts of awesome adventurous sort of trips and things like that. So Sam, thanks for jumping on. Do you want to go into a little bit more about yourself, what you do, and how you got into expedition medicine, everything?
Yeah, so hiya. Been a paramedic now for around 5 years. And before that was just big into sort of the outdoors, raft guiding, kayaking, all of that kind of fun stuff. And then trained as a paramedic and just kind of found a little niche to try and be able to bridge the work as a paramedic and going out on expeditions into the wilderness, and managed to, over the last couple of years, bring them together. And now, yeah, work as a paramedic and also managed to take that further afield, places like all over the world, jungle, desert, mountain, and enjoy it, really.
That's really cool. How did you get involved with expedition medicine? Because obviously it's very different to the normal sort of on-road paramedic sort of scope.
So for me, it was just kind of through chance initially. I knew that's kind of where I wanted to go. Didn't really know how to get into it. And it kind of just came from my kayaking, constantly being out on the river, kayaking, raft guiding. And I just got, literally, I think it was as I was, just after I qualified as a paramedic, got a message from one of my good friends who basically said, Sam, are you free to come kayaking? Can you come a safety kayak for an A-list celebrity on a film shoot? I was like, yes, definitely. Just did that. Turned out to be one of the Gordon Ramsay productions. And because I was there for kayaking, but I was also a paramedic. So I was just a bit cheeky, always speaking to the camera crews, the directors, letting them know that obviously I'm doing the white water safety, but I can also, I'm also a paramedic. And yeah, it was just really cheeky and kind of just got contacts through that. And it slowly built through pushing that way, really.
That's really cool. I guess that's the power of networking, which is something that we talk about on the podcast and sort of getting yourself out there. Where you've obviously been to a few different places now. Where have you been, and what has your role as a paramedic involved when you've been doing those sorts of adventures? Because I've seen on your Instagram that I'll put the link in for everyone to check out. You've just been to, is it Colombia?
Yes, we've just spent a month in Colombia. This was with a Netflix expedition film crew filming a natural history documentary. So I can't go into too much into actually what we were doing there just yet because of NDAs and all that kind of stuff. But role was, it was a mix of doing the health and safety side and the medic side for the film crew. So when we're out there, it's really remote. We're a good 5-6 hours from any kind of hospital on that one. So if anyone was to get injured, treat it. You're there for, in case anything happens, basically, is the sort of the main role, treating that normal paramedic stuff, but in their more hazardous environments. And you've got that longer kind of patient care. You're on your own. You've got these long transfer times. So you're much more isolated than you are sort of working on the road. So you've got to take all of that into account. And a lot of it on the other side of that is just prevention stuff. So every morning, spending the day, make sure everyone's hydrated, well-rested, fed, looking after things like the feet, because feet on expedition is the biggest cause of things to fall apart, basically. And keeping on top of making sure everyone's doing the basic stuff well to try and prevent any injuries from happening. And then the safety side. So, excuse me, we're working on a platform. So I was doing the rope work, harnessing somebody on for that because we were using a big jib, which is like this big 8-10 meter crane arm with a camera on the end on the top of the platform. So I was assessing that, making sure it was safe, decided that we wanted to put the guys that were operating it on a harness. So, you know, sorting the rope work out for that, to make sure they were safe and signing all that off as well. So it's a bit of a dual role between the medic side and also health and safety, rope work, white water safety. So that was Colombia, and that was last month. Headed to Saudi Arabia in February for 3 weeks, which is really cool. That was for to look after some Saudi rock climbers. So they were climbing some new routes out there. They're trying to promote Saudi as a tourist place. So they were climbing some new routes, showing off the rock climbing in Saudi, because it's absolutely crazy, because they've got big stacks of rock in the desert. So they're actually rock climbing in the desert, as opposed to in sort of mountainous terrain. So it's quite different, all on sandstone rock. So I was out there. And then last year was quite an exciting year. Did a couple of trips to Peru, spent 3 weeks in the Gabonese jungle in Africa. But then also done some other stuff in Thailand, so on League of Their Own. Again, doing all the safety on the road trip, doing all the safety for that, as well as the paramedic care. That's so awesome. You can go from working in the jungle. You know, Gabon, we were 22 hours from any kind of help. It was a long, big extraction times, to working with sort of celebrities, footballers in a city in Vietnam. So it's quite a broad area to work into, but quite specialist as well.
Yeah, that's really cool. I mean, you've been to so many incredible places doing so many incredible things. And I think that's the exciting part of paramedicine now, I guess, is there's so many things you can branch into, which is really, really cool. You've touched on it there as well, but there are obviously those challenges of, say, distance to definitive healthcare and things like that. So do you want to go through some of those challenges of expedition medicine that we don't usually have to ever really consider that much in our normal sort of on-road pre-hospital medicine?
Yeah, so first of all, we've not got an ambulance. So we haven't got the stretchers, the extraction equipment or anything like that. We've got my Medicare, I've got a portable stretcher in there, got all the drugs, medications that we carry, things like a traction splint, that kind of stuff. I haven't got a team of people like on heart that can come in. You know, we've got six of us that could then all lift with rope work. I'm on my own. I'm the only one that's clinically trained. We have got other people around, but I'm the only one with any kind of clinical knowledge. So it's, if anything happens, it's utilizing the whole team to be able to work for an extraction of a patient, to get them to a vehicle, to hospital, if we're going to use a helicopter, if it's available. So the first area really is logistics. So it's, before we're going away, spending time looking at where all the local hospitals are, but also what they specialize in. Because again, it's similar to the UK, different hospitals will treat different patients, but it's also, some of them are nowhere near as good out there as they are in the UK. So it's finding out what hospitals treat what, and then how far it is to get there. Is there a helicopter available? And if there is, we can't get a helicopter to come into the jungle. So it's where would we get to get the helicopter out, if it's possible? What vehicles have we got? Is there an ambulance available if we need it? But then the ambulances in countries, like when I was in Laos, I spent a couple of days with the ambulance team out there. We had a day off, and I just went and found an ambulance station and just explored, went to talk to them really. Their ambulance was an old Japanese van that had a stretcher in it, and that was it. They had nothing else. They had an oxygen cylinder that was empty, and they couldn't get it refilled. They had no bandages. They had their defib box. The defib had broken, and they couldn't get a new one. So that was just full of, like, those full of climbing harnesses. There was no medical equipment whatsoever. So the ambulance services out there, they're not like what we are in the UK. And even if you could, so I am that clinician until we get them to hospital, making sure the medical treatment's right, making sure I'm happy with their decisions, and getting them to the right place. Which, yes, that can be quite tricky, just trying to figure all of that out in different countries. Don't always speak the language, so having to liaise with somebody to translate, but then trying to translate medical terms, as we all know, even in Sheffield, it's easier said than done.
Yes, absolutely. Now, that's fascinating. And I guess that's the logistical side of things. Do you find that, obviously, you know, those extended times that you may have with a person, if they are sort of critically unwell, how do you find that you manage yourself sort of under that? Because obviously you've worked, you know, on roads, so you're used to sort of that chaos and and the pressure, but you know that you're, say, for example, at Sheffield, you know more than like 10, 15, 20 minutes from a hospital that, you know, we'll be able to sort the patient out beyond sort of our scope. What is kind of your way of dealing with that sort of that pressure and that the challenging or complex sort of critical people? Because obviously a lot of people that go on these expeditions are usually quite fit and healthy and doing these things because they are, you know, quite healthy and able to do these sorts of things. But when that does happen, how do you manage yourself?
So, yeah, you've said it there. The patient demographic of what we're dealing with is very different. We're not having the elderly falls, the frail people with complex medical history or a polypharmacy or anything like that. They're all pretty young, fit people that have, you know, had medicals beforehand. So in terms of the long extraction times, it's kind of, can get a little bit calm in a sense. So the first half an hour, the first hour of getting everything sorted, treating them initially, trying to stabilize them can be quite stressful. Obviously, I'm trying to treat them medically, liaise with locals, getting that sorted. But when things are in place, it kind of gets, you almost go a little bit calm and methodical, and you're just kind of treating everything as you need to. You've got things in place. You have a lot of trust on other people that you've asked somebody to do something, so that's what they're going to do. And you have to rely on a team. You have to know that the team are going to do, you have to have the evacuation plan in place, and you have to know whose job is going to be what. Once it's allocated, you have to just trust them that it's done. Because if I start trying to micromanage everything for that amount of time, it would just be too much. So get all the plans in place, allocate roles of who's going to be driving, who's liaising with the local hospitals, who's sort of doing a kind of a pre-alert. We will always call the hospital in advance if it's, you know, something serious and we're, you know, 20 hours away. We try and make a plan, get somebody there so they're ready. We've also got to liaise with the UK, you know, letting the UK teams know what's happened, because we are all sort of usually UK crew. But again, I can't manage any of that. So it's like, right, this needs to happen. That's your role. And I'll just sort of manage it clinically. And once you've got over that first hurdle of you've treated everything you can initially, that whole reassessment, do everything a bit slower, reassess. And yeah, you kind of just go for it like you were on the road. And that, you know, 20-minute job on the road suddenly turns into an hour. Your time just kind of blurs a little bit.
I guess that makes sense. It's so true. I guess, you know, having that really good leadership value and skill there, but also, like you said, having that trust on your team as well, that they are going to do things. I guess that's a really important part of this job. So that's obviously something how you manage, like, obviously sort of prolonged extrication or challenging sort of cases. What are some of the other characteristics you'd be required to have to be good at expedition medicine?
So I think the most important thing is being able to get on with people. Like, first and foremost, because I'm not working on an ambulance. I'm not responding to jobs. If I wanted to say I was away in Colombia I was there for 4 weeks, I treated 3 people in 4 weeks. So I'm not busy all the time. So you've got to be able to get on with the crew. You've got to be able to get your hands stuck into jobs that aren't being a medic as well. So helping with kit, helping sort, you know, water, food, just getting stuck in and being able to be professional, but socialize and get on with people, you know, making everybody else's life easier. Being a valued member of the crew is definitely, it can't be overlooked. I've heard so many stories on expedition where the medic, as they refer to it, is just being sort of lazy and not getting stuck in. And it kind of puts a bit of a dampener on the whole experience for everybody. So number one, you've got to be able to get on with people and just be sociable, be professional. But yeah, get on with people as well. The other thing is being comfortable in the environment. So before, I was able to go to places like the jungle and living in sort of jungle camps and the hammocks. Your first job there can't be, so your first time there, sorry, can't be on a job. Before I was a paramedic, I was out all over the world working as a whitewater raft guide on expeditions personally, just because I had that sort of passion for it, really enjoyed it. Learn how to survive in a jungle. Like, you're constantly switched. Like, so when you're in the jungle, you're constantly having to be switched on. There's things everywhere on the floor, in the trees, insects, animals, dangerous plants. You've always got to be switched on. You can't just put your bag down and switch off. Even putting your med kit down, you don't know if anything's going to have crawled underneath it in that dark, warm environment. and you pick it up and somebody's going to jump at you. So it's constantly being switched on, being comfortable, because you can't go down as the medic because you've got no one to look after you as well, kind of thing. There's always the risk, but you've got to be comfortable looking after yourself and having a passion for it, really. And then obviously clinically, so being a paramedic is great in some of the shoots, but the majority of the work isn't a paramedic level work of what we do. The majority of stuff out on these expeditions is the prevention stuff, which we've kind of touched on, making sure people are hydrated, using sun cream, using Mozzie spray, preventing anybody from getting injured, looking after their feet, you know, constantly reminding people, a bit of a broken record. But then the other thing is that primary care stuff, which as paramedics we're not really very good at. We don't really sort of do it as a day-to-day kind of role. So things like minor infections, minor cuts, rashes, sort of stuff that doesn't need, you know, you're expected to deal with because you're there as the medic. You're, you know, that's what your role is. But it's that definition of a paramedic, a doctor, a nurse, like who, we're just a medic. It's just a broad term. We're expected to know everything about everything and treat everything. And definitely that primary care knowledge, I've had to do a lot of work on top of the paramedic skills to be able to treat different rashes, recognize them, looking after people's, if they get like a nasty insect bite or rash, foot rot is a great one, damp wet feet for 3 weeks trekking through a jungle. So the big stuff, the big injuries, the big paramedic level care is few and far between because you're on it with the prevention. But carrying antibiotics for minor infections, your wound care. So I had it before. One of our jungle guides in Gabon slipped with his machete. Nasty cut on his hand. And he wasn't really that bothered, but it definitely needed cleaning. A couple of sutures in that, and he was good to go. So he didn't, and he could carry on with the expedition. So it's having that extra level of skills that can allow, you can treat it there, you can monitor it there, but you don't need to put a stop to the expedition for something that minor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas
in Sheffield, someone does that, we'll just take them into Northern and get them to sort it out. Whereas we've not really got the option when you're looking at, well, we're 22 hours from anyone that can sort this. That's, you know, 4 days by the time we leave, re-kit, come back in. So that's a lot of time just for a cut on a hand kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, obviously, now you've got extended skills to do all of that. And like you said, there's lots of that primary healthcare. What other courses or qualifications and things like that have you had to go and do in order to be able to perform your role as expedition paramedic?
Yeah, coming through that. So the first thing for anyone to get into it would be you've got to get your NQP sorted now, get your 2 or 3 years under your belt. And when you're doing that, getting yourself out onto sort of expeditions as a volunteer, not necessarily as a medic, but just getting into them environments. But there isn't any specific kind of pathway. There's loads of options and there's loads of things you can do. Again, firstly, having a passion, reading up on things yourself. But then there's a number of courses which I can send you a link for a few companies that offer some really good courses, which I've done. But a few good places to look, obviously, the World Extreme Medicine, they've got loads of stuff on their website. I'm sure quite a few people have heard of them. They offer courses, CPD online. But a few other places as well is the Wilderness Medical Society, which they're based in America. But they've got a lot of online learning, a lot of online CPD as well, in a slightly different way to World Extreme Medicine. And then you've also got, in terms of courses, so I've done things like the Advanced Wilderness Life Support, the Pre-Hospital Trauma Life Support course, but that was based in a remote setting as opposed to the back of an ambulance. So it's the same ticket, but it's based in that slightly more remote, more austere environment. So looking at that, so if you go into the Remote Area Risk International, they offer a lot of courses, and they've actually just started a remote medic training program for healthcare professionals where they list a load of different courses from your wilderness dentistry, because your dentistry problems can be huge on expedition, because as soon as you get a dental problem, it can stop a whole expedition, and that little bit of pain, that little bit of infection in a tooth, being able to recognize that, treat it, clean it out is really, really important. The remote pre-hospital trauma life support, and then things like your prolonged field care courses. So that's basically when help doesn't arrive. You have to look after that patient for 24, 48 hours in these environments. So you're going beyond just the emergency medicine that we do normally on the road, looking at some of that more long-term nursing care, making sure they're eating, drinking, monitoring urine output,
Your antibiotics that you may need to give if it's like an open wound or infection to get on top of that. So that's another course which is really, really good and helpful just to get that wider understanding of some of the stuff we deal with. And then going back to the Wilderness Medical Society, they also have like a fellowship in the Academy of Wilderness Medicine. So that fellowship is sort of a program which points you towards getting lots of different credits and experience towards this award at the end of it, and kind of gives a focus for your CPD, which is really good. So every CPD event I do, we try and tick off credits. It's got some practical, some face-to-face, some conferences, and then also after experience as well. So you can go and volunteer for certain projects and things like that.
The other thing to look at is some kind of understanding on insurances. So your medical insurance, indemnity insurance as well, which is something that not many people think about, but it's really, really important because you're not, as a paramedic, if the ambulance service, you're covered for all of that, really. You join the College of Paramedics and all that kind of stuff, but you're covered through YAS. Whereas when you're working sort of on your own privately, it's really important to look at the legal side of it as well as the medical side to getting your indemnity insurance sorted, understanding about paperwork, making sure your paperwork is obviously really good, and going down that route really as well. In terms of other courses, there's a number on, you can sort of research outdoor wilderness courses and stuff. And there's a number, like I said, I'll send you a number of links. But also what I found has been really valuable for me personally has been my kayaking experience. So anything on water, I'm always kind of, I can kayak, I can do that dual role. Not everyone can do that, that's how I grew up, but a must have really for most expeditions is your mountain leader qualification. So it's like group management. Having that is a really good first stepping stone aside from the clinical side. So you're kind of having to do both roles. It's quite an easy ticket to get, but it's one that, you know, everyone looks for as sort of the baseline of, you know, group management, working outside, navigation, all of that kind of stuff brought in together.
Awesome. Sweet. That sounds really great. I'll get you to send through all of those links if you can, and I'll pop them into the show notes so that everyone can go and have a look through those. For all of our listeners today who are in Australia, I guess there's lots of sort of similar pathways that they can follow there as well. There's lots of companies that are coming out for them there, and obviously the UK, like you said, there's the Advanced Wilderness Life Support and everything. So there's, I guess, like you said, just taking on those opportunities as you come and like finding out what you like. So if this is something that interests you, I guess starting out early and taking those steps to gain experience and all different sorts of things. But like you mentioned there, you said that you've got obviously indemnity insurance and all of that. What are the regulations around working in an overseas capacity? Like, what's your scope, and does do the lines get blurred a little?
Yeah, so it's a really good question, and it is a very grey area for sure. There's no black and white. So if you look at like HCPC guidelines, it's your scope of practice is set by your employer. But when I'm working for myself, I'm kind of my own employer. If I'm self-employed, work for myself. So kind of means I set my own scope of practice, but then that brings a whole load of other issues into it. So I think it's being able to prove that you're competent and comfortable in everything that you're performing. So things like anything that's above and beyond a paramedic skill, so like your suturing, your wound care, just constantly every year doing extra CPD courses, constantly practicing, doing your reflections, proving that you are remaining competent in all of those skills. And then always making sure that you've got someone. So in terms of paperwork, I've got a critical care paramedic and a heart paramedic that I send some of my paperwork to. They read through our paperwork and kind of like, just to sort of make sure they're happy, you know, they'll say, yeah, we've read it. This is, you know, you're on the right tracks. It's just a bit of that quality assurance, really, because there isn't any of that out there, really, for what I do. Not everybody does that, but definitely looking after yourself, protecting yourself for the longevity of the career, you want to make sure you're on top of that. And then in terms of, scope, as I said, scope of practice, it's a weird one. It's making sure you're on top of everything. Really, making sure you've got your medical liability insurance. And then, so when we're out there, I carry antibiotics basically. So, but the antibiotics, it's a weird gray area because I've not got a prescriber's course, but I'm off on these expeditions where the risk of infection is really high. So it's making sure that I've got a, so the antibiotics are prescribed to me, almost like a PGD, where I'm able to then give them under certain problems. And then the, at the bottom, it always says, you know, we'll always speak to a medical professional, so a doctor, before administering it, if possible. Now, that's not always possible because we're in the jungle. But it's when you go on these expeditions, making sure that whoever you're working for has a reach back service. And that's basically a 24-hour on-call UK doctor that a lot of expedition companies use. It means that anybody in the crew can call them. It's not just for me, that I'll speak to them before I go, let them know I'm a paramedic with these skills. This is what I'm carrying. This is where we're going. These are the risks that I kind of foresee. And then sort of discuss it with them then. If I can talk to them before I give any antibiotics, because again, it's not necessarily a immediate life-threatening thing that I need to treat there and then with antibiotics, I can have that time to try and get some signal on the sat phone, give them a quick call. But again, it's having that knowledge of what antibiotics are used for what, when am I going to use them? And I kind of have quite a low threshold for that out there, because it's such a dirty environment. The risk of infection in that kind of environment is so much higher. So again, that's just another, on top of the primary care stuff, that's what we're talking about, extra skills and extra things you've had to learn about. And there has been no courses I've done on that. It has just been personal research, understanding it, getting it all signed off, and slowly learning while I'm doing it on the job as well, becoming more comfortable.
For sure. I mean, that's really interesting. I mean, that's, I guess, that challenge of, I always wondered sort of what your scope would be and how does it work. So it's fascinating what you're mentioning there.
There's loads of really Gucci stuff out there in terms of clinical stuff. There's loads of really cool stuff coming out here, there and everywhere. Just reading one journal article on some cool fancy procedure in a jungle would not mean that I'd be comfortable in doing it, and therefore it wouldn't be within my scope of practice, because I can't prove that I'm comfortable in it. And there is times when you might know something needs to happen, but you're not comfortable doing it. It's that balance. You don't want to mess up clinically, put yourself in that awful position of doing something you're not ready for. So when you're out there and stuff, if you've got an injury or if you've got an incident, you can stabilize it. If you can get them to hospital, get them to a hospital. Don't try and push yourself too much out of your comfort zone. Make sure you're staying within stuff that you're comfortable and competent in doing. If you're not comfortable suturing, don't just try and do it out there. You have to say, oh, I can't suture, I'm not comfortable doing it. This injury would be best treated here. And making sure you know what you're happy doing and don't try and push it too much out there. Because if you make a mistake out there, it can, you know, snowball effect into longer problems later on down the trip.
Yeah, if that
makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess it's comfortable, you know, like having that evidence that you've been able to do things and that confidence. And I guess that also just applies on road as well.
And exactly, yeah.
I mean, you're not going to go do something that, you know, you might not have done for years, or you might just ask someone for a bit of help or assistance or whatever it may be. So I guess it does translate over. What's some of the most memorable experiences you've had as an expedition medic that keep you coming back for more?
So kind of two things on that, really. So good question. Firstly, paramedic, I still love being a paramedic. I know a lot of people, you know, don't. I love it. I love the job. I've got a passion for it. And being able to help. So when we're out there on expedition, I'm not just treating the crew. Although my job is there to look after the team, we go into a lot of these remote villages that don't have healthcare. So I carry extra antibiotics, extra medications, so I can spend a day while the crew are off, you know, doing an activity that doesn't really require me. There's a number of times where I set up like a little clinic, just treating minor things with the local villagers that they've never really got seen. They've not really ever had a doctor, and I can give them some kind of help and advice. You know, if they've got some weird skin cut that's got a bit gammy because they've not cleaned it, you know, giving a bit of care on that. We've had people with sort of dental issues, so I've done some emergency dental training. Nowhere near a dentist, but having able to have a look at a bit of an assessment, trying to suggest. Dentist, they're never going to go to a dentist, so you can't tell them to, because they won't. But it's trying to give some advice on a bit of pain relief for them, you know, a bit of mouthwash, how they can deal with that. So it's really rewarding being able to use your field and actually help people who otherwise would have just suffered. And the other side of it is we go to some absolutely incredible places. Like, it is a dream job for me. I absolutely love it. But we don't go to... In Colombia, we weren't in... Bogota. We weren't in the tourist places. We don't go to tourist places on these kind of trips. We're going remote. We're going off the beaten track. It is really hard, really grueling. But you go into places you'd never get to see any other way. You wouldn't be able to just book a week holiday to some of the places we go to because they're just inaccessible. So going out with these remote crews, you get access to places that otherwise you'd never get access to. You meet people that you'd never come across, and seeing how other people live, other communities, it's just pretty incredible to be able to spend time with them and just see a different world, different way of life. And you meet some of the most incredible people that you never ever come across in any other way. So it's kind of that too, you know, helping out clinically and then just where you are and what we're doing is just really, really incredible.
That's awesome. I think that sounds like if it's something for people and they're excited to go and do it, I mean, that sounds pretty incredible. What would be your sort of final takeaway for people that want to get into expedition medicine, or if they find themselves interested, not necessarily just in the on the road paramedic sort of thing?
So first thing is the whole don't run before you can walk. Just if you've got a passion for it, keep pushing for it. There'll be a lot of, you know, volunteer on these kind of, you know, expeditions as a, you know, helping out, trying to get experience. I've done a lot of, like, given up a lot of my own time to try and get experience, going to, you know, the wellness medical conferences. Again, I can send you links for all that kind of stuff. So first thing is giving up your own time, having a passion for it and pushing. And there will be, it's not an easy road, and it takes a lot of time, a lot of commitment. It's not something you can just go and do, really. It's definitely something I've worked for a number of years. Getting that experience as a paramedic under your belt, as well as the experience of, you know, getting your ML, getting on some expeditions as a participant, as a you know, candidate, as it were, getting out there, getting used to these environments, doing these extra courses. And then the final bit will be being a bit cheeky and getting on with people. You know, it's all about contacts. Almost everything I've had has come from a previous job. So I spent 3 months on an expedition in Laos in Southeast Asia. And from that, got on really well with the crew. And one of the guys was having a few drinks at a work do. Someone said they needed a medic. They put my name forward because he'd worked with me. And that's where I got the Columbia job from. You're only as good as your last job. And it's always networking, giving up time, going to these conferences, meeting people, and pushing for it. And yeah, it's definitely achievable. But if anyone's got any questions, obviously, you can put my details in, and I'm more than happy to have a chat with anybody that's interested and wants a bit more sort of information on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll pop in your Instagram handle, which is Specialist Adventure Medic. But I'll pop all of those links that you send through and everything into the show notes so everyone can go and click on it now if they feel like it and get into it because it sounds really exciting. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your experience and your knowledge surrounding this. It's really exciting.
Oh, not at all. It's great. Like it's great talking to people about it because it is a new area. Like there isn't like a pathway like there is to critical care or there is to primary care or anything like that. There is no sort of pathway into this. It's very much, I've very, very much been figuring it out as I've been going along. So it's great to be able to try and share a few things that I've picked up along the way, really, with other people, because it's just a great industry. And as you mentioned at the beginning, there's so much more to being a paramedic than just being a paramedic, if that makes sense. Just work on the ambulance service. There's so many avenues opening up now. And yeah, it'd be really good to get more people into this kind of world, really.
Absolutely, definitely. And that's the thing, that the past month of podcasts have been around all the different avenues that paramedics can take you and all that sort of stuff. So it's been fantastic to speak to all different people about their journeys. And yeah, I really appreciate you jumping on. So obviously I've said your Instagram handle is Specialist Adventure Medic. Is there is that the best place for anyone to reach out to you?
Yeah, so on there I've got my email address on that page as well. And there'll be a link to our website there as well, coming up in the next few weeks, hopefully. So yeah, you can just message me on there, and I'll get back to you and be able to, yeah, go from there, really.
Awesome. Sounds fantastic. Thank you so much again, Sam, for jumping on.
No worries at all. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Student Paramedic Podcast. You can connect with us on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or you can email us at thestudentparamedicpodcast@gmail.com.